Is he speaking? Do you understand him?
In a way, Grogu and I can feel each other's thoughts.
Grogu?
Yes. That's his name.
Grogu.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Chris.
I'm Richard.
And this is House Podcastica, the Mandalorian edition.
This week, we're covering The Mandalorian Season 2, Episode 5, Chapter 13, The Jedi.
I want to thank Eric for filling in for me last week. That was really fun to listen in as a fan and hear you guys. It's great. And we have a special co-host this week. She's my wife, Jenny. Welcome, Jenny.
Hey. Hello. Thank you for having me here.
Or as Richard calls her, Jenny.
Jenny.
He says it with way more emotion than you do.
Oh, ouch.
Dope.
Jenny. Okay, so here's our usual Star Wars question of the week. I heard you ask if a listener wrote the one last week about who's more lethal. I actually came up with that, and I loved your guys' answer. It really varied. That was cool.
Yeah.
And I came up with this one, too. It is a very broad question, but it's if you could change one thing about Star Wars, what would it be?
And when he came up with that, I was like, he's brilliant. Because he knows that I'm super negative. And he knows that by bringing this one sentence out, one question out, that I would be able to like release all my negativity into this one question and then be positive
and then
for the rest.
Be nice about the so you said something came to mind right away, huh?
Yes.
What was it?
It was the three Death Stars. I mean, like, come on, three Death Stars. What? I was like, it failed. Let's try it again. It failed again. Let's try
make it bigger
again.
This time.
I mean, it's like, I mean, if they had said we had three Death Stars and we had to hunt them each down, then that would be different. But the fact that the Empire went back and built another Death Star after it failed just felt kind of coyote and roadrunner-ish. Kind of yeah. Like, really? It took you this long to fight this empire if all they could think of is building another Death Star? But
and
I
then
mean,
they did it again.
They did it again!
Yeah.
So yes. So the three Death Stars.
I guess it's a little bit more to ask if you have a solution to that. I totally agree with you, by the way, but
I don't know. I mean, I'm coming from a place of emotion because I love the Star Wars universe. I love everything about it, but that death, every time the Death Star came back, there was a part of me that just, I can't explain it.
So
just
if they
died
do a Star
inside.
Wars Episode 10, Death Star 4.
I mean, I can probably justify, I can probably start thinking like, okay, the Empire is a clueless guy. The first time he used that pickup line, you know, and it worked when he destroyed that planet. What was that planet that he destroyed?
Alderaan,
right? And he was like, that totally worked. That was awesome. Everybody thought it was so cool. It totally worked. The chick just...
So he got some early positive reinforcement.
Right. And then to use that same pickup line for attempts 2, 3, and 4 and have it fail completely and not learn from it, that's what it feels like.
Did the second Death Star destroy... I think it destroyed some rebel ships at least, right?
Fully functional,
another planet.
Took out a rebel ship.
That's right. And then the third one, I think that one destroyed a few planets, but boy, that...
Oh, it did?
That really sucked. Anyways, okay, that's a good one. Let's move on. Rich, what about you?
You know, my first thought, probably as most of us, was Jar Jar Binks, but he's just silly and annoying. So what I realize that I still can't get past is how Luke Skywalker made his exit from Star Wars. Most of it's on me, I'm sure, because... Well, basically for 2 years, I built up in my mind how awesome it was going to be to see one of my childhood heroes resurface more powerful than ever and kick some major butt. But instead, he rolls around in self-pity and dies on a rock. I was so disappointed for what could have been.
Did you at least like the scene where it seems like he's there with Kylo Ren?
Yeah.
And
Yeah, that was cool because that was what cool, I was right? waiting for. I was just like, oh, this is it. This is going to be it. And then I was just left like, you've witnessed something incredible, you know, and I couldn't process it. I was like, wait, what? What the hell?
No.
What is this? He's not there?
He did do something incredible at the end. It just killed him, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't that he just like rolled over and died. I mean, he was doing something amazing at the end and then he died because it was so freaking amazing.
So stressful.
Yeah. I didn't like how he was like all butthurt about failing to train Kylo Ren and all that stuff. I just didn't care for the way he was portrayed. And again, it's on me mostly because, you know, I built it up in my own mind.
Yeah, I mean, I get you. Like, I remember when talking about this movie, The Last Jedi, I thought, well, it sort of mirrors what happened with Yoda and Obi-Wan. They failed and they had to go into hiding, but it's just not that inspiring of a story.
Yeah.
And you don't want to see that happen to Luke too. Okay, awesome. What about you, Chris?
Well, first of all, I think the three Death Stars answer is actually a pretty good one that I hadn't really considered, because it's sort of like the Empire goes, you know, we've tried nothing and we're all out of ideas. So that's pretty good. I don't mind that. But having said that, I'm glad, Jason, that this was a question that you came up with, because with all due respect, I don't like this question very much. It kind of...
Actually, it was Jenny.
Oh, well.
I'm just kidding.
I inspired him.
But, like, it sort of started making me think about Star Wars in a way that I didn't like, because I was going with more real-world things, which is weird. And most of them are sort of like what-ifs. You know, what if Disney had bought it or hadn't bought it from Lucasfilm? Or what if Disney bought it way earlier? Or what if George Lucas had never, you know, made the special editions or something like that? So I started thinking of that kind of stuff and realized that none of that means anything, because if any of those things had happened, you could argue that it made it better, but you could also argue that it would equally make it way worse, you know? And then I was like, Star Wars is so influential in my early life. It's, you know, the beginning of my love for sci-fi and fantasy, for storytelling, for movies, even for just pop culture stuff. And I didn't think I would be into the same kind of things now if it wasn't for Star Wars. And of course, there are all kinds of things about it that don't work perfectly. There are things about it that I don't like, but warts and all, I'm just sort of grateful that Star Wars exists as a phenomenon and as a thing and as a part of my life. And so I came to the idea that my answer is nothing. I don't want anything to change about Star Wars because I'm just so grateful that it's a thing that I love. But having said that, I say get rid of Jar Jar Binks because fuck that guy.
I was going to say, what about Jar Jar?
Yeah.
Yeah. You totally failed on that one, but that's okay. That's okay. At least you slipped in Jar Jar.
Yeah, I guess so.
No, I'm just kidding. I understand what you're saying. Yeah. Well, my, I mean, your instincts about, you know, what if Disney had bought it earlier or not at all, I think you're trying to reconcile with that some of the later movies weren't as good as the original trilogy, especially the prequels, right?
Prequels, and for sure. I like the final trilogy almost as much as the original. Like. Yeah.
So that, I guess, that's where I differ. If what first came up with me, if I could change one thing about Star Wars, and it kind of helped solve Jenny's problem and Richard's too, but maybe not yours, Chris, is that instead of J.J. Abrams, I'd hire Edgar Wright to direct The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd ask him to write the script based on George Lucas's ideas. When Disney bought Star Wars, George Lucas submitted treatments for the next few movies or something, or synopses, and they kind of ignored them. And he didn't realize they were going to do that. And he was disappointed.
Yep.
But I just think Edgar Wright is this untapped talent, that he's done relatively small movies so far, but I think he's got such style and attention to detail and adventurousness and simplicity, you know. I just think he would really knock it out of the park. And like The Mandalorian, his movies are about cool moments. And so I would just love to see that. Or, you know, if not him, then Jon Favreau. If Jon Favreau have been in charge of The Force Awakens. I just think that as good as some of the aspects of the sequels were, they really took a wrong turn overall with the story. And it just, all said and done, it feels like kind of not a big success to me. And so that's what I would change. If I could change one thing, go back, get Edgar Wright in there, kick J.J. Abrams to the curb.
Well, you know what? I think Edgar Wright is a genius. Like, he's made incredible films. And I like all of them, to be honest with you, that I've seen.
Me too.
That is a really good choice, I think. But my point was just like, you just don't know, right? It could have gone that way, and it could easily have been even worse or terrible or whatever. So
could have been.
So I kind of am like, I mean, maybe risk it. But I was just kind of like, you know what? It is what it is. And it's a huge thing to me. And, you know, that's just how I have to live with it.
I mean, I'm not saying have Edgar Wright go back and do episode 4. No, yeah. Those are
no,
sacred.
But he can still do episode 10, right?
He could.
He could, yeah. You never know.
And you know what? I'm on board for that.
I mean, Taika Waititi's going to do one, and I'm excited about that if it happens.
Yeah.
He's great, too.
I hope he does a good job.
Okay. That was fun. I hope people don't mind us going a little bit negative, but it's fun to mix it up, I thought. And I liked hearing what you guys had to say. But that said, let's get into the positive, because I think we're all going to agree that this was quite an episode. I don't know, maybe not. But let's get into it. It's our top three highlights for The Mandalorian Season 2, Episode 5, Chapter 13, The Jedi. So you got your Jedi, Rich.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You got your lightsabers.
This episode answered a whole buttload of questions I had about the series. I mean, it was like, are we going to see a Jedi? Check. Are we going to see a lightsaber? Check. Who is Baby Yoda? Check. It's a great episode. As much for the gunfighting and lightsaber swinging as for the Star Wars canon and all the name dropping. You know, shout out to Master Yoda.
Yeah. Yeah. You know how I've been saying I don't need it to further the plot as long as it's a good episode, but I thought this checked both, and that's awesome.
Yeah, totally.
And I love we usually start by saying in general what we liked about it. And in general, I liked, well, it was kind of like a samurai movie, and it had a really moody, kind of mystical atmosphere,
yeah.
Dark and like the burnt forest and the beautiful Japanese samurai aesthetic, but all in this like monotone gray. It just felt really cool. And then all that other stuff, yeah, just learning all these details that we didn't know before. So I thought it was pretty awesome. What about you, Jenny?
Yeah. I mean, are we going
to... No, just like in general, did you like it?
Yes, yes.
Chris?
Yeah, I liked it too, for kind of all the same things you just said. It was a good episode. The Jedi stuff was great. Cool lightsaber action, and the aesthetic of it all was really amazing. There was one part I was a little underwhelmed with, but I'll get into that as we go on. But overall, great, great episode as usual.
You know, first watch through, I actually thought it was a bit slow too. And I think partly because I was watching it with Bodhi and he was fidgeting, and I could tell, you know, during the episode with the monster spiders a few weeks ago, he was just couldn't tear his eyes away. But here, when there's a lot of exposition going on or just kind of that slow burn, he doesn't give a crap.
Sure. Yes. Well, he is three. So we now know that horror films are paced at his the rate thing, of a 3-year-old.
Oh, wow. Perfect.
And Westerns are paced at more of an adult level.
Yeah. So since there's four of us this week and there's also a lot of lore to go over, I'm not going to do a top three. I'll jump in with comments, but I'm just going to leave that to you guys. And then at the end, whatever you guys didn't cover, I'll do in the lore and the callbacks segment.
Slacker.
Sounds good.
Wait. So explain. We're not doing top three.
We're
but
doing
we're
a gonna... top three, and oh, okay. You're going to start. What's your number three?
Oh, number three. The new world building. I mean, this was a new planet. We've been going back a lot to Tatooine and all that stuff. And so it's good to actually go to a new planet.
Place, yeah. First appearance. What was it called?
Corvus. Which means crow in Latin. And it was, you know, they had basically built a world that has been decimated, destroyed by the magistrate. So I thought it was kind of cool because there were burnt out trees. And I was like, hey, we're in California. This is just like California. during the fires, wildfires. Oh, look at that. Look how orangey and dark the sky is. Yeah, so I thought that was nice. The Asiatic architecture, to be honest, I cannot tell you if it's Chinese or Japanese. I'm not an architecture major.
I'd assume Japanese since it's sort of a take on a samurai movie.
Yeah,
but there was something about it that looked kind of Chinese
too. Well, that one, like you called it a drum building.
The drum tower.
Is that more Chinese?
I think that's actually more Chinese because I think I saw something like that in Xi'an. But anyways, the round building, because I don't think Japanese Well, you know what? I told you, I'm not an expert. So I'm sure there are Japanese, Chinese architecture, ancient architecture experts out there, but I'm just
going
to say.
And there's overlap too, I think.
Asiatic.
Yeah.
So the Asiatic architecture, but at the same time, completely mixed with the Western, right? Down to the main street where the battles happen, mm-hmm. right? The villagers hiding behind their shutters.
Or the Mandalorian has his hand down by his holster and it twitches.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I love it all.
I love that, yeah.
It's classic. It's fun. It rubs an itch. It's just fun.
When you
rub your itches? okay.
I have no nails.
When you guys say drum tower, are you talking about that alarm bell tower or something else?
No, the round building behind the magistrate in the sanctum. Oh, right. Yeah,
where the water garden was.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I thought the alarm bell tower thing that she slices in half as they attack was kind of cool too, but I didn't know if that was something related to Chinese or Japanese culture or anything like that. I will also say that even though I thought it was a really cool aesthetic to the place, I didn't like this new city as much as I liked the maritime city on Trask, or was it called Trask, a couple episodes ago. That one I thought was really neat, really unique, and really felt alive. This one, and I know the people were all hiding away because it was occupied, but my first thought on this place was that there's like nobody around. It didn't really feel as lived in as the maritime city. So it looked cool. And of course, the showdown in the street and in the garden was awesome. But even at the end, when some of the people were supposed to be back out and celebrating, it didn't really feel like it was a bustling city, but it was still cool to look at.
Right. No. I totally agree. Yeah. I mean, this is obviously a city in fear, and it's actually, it's kind
like
of a classic city.
Place. Yeah, but he's saying when the celebration, I thought a lot of people came out, and I liked that they did like a flute rendition of the Mandalorian
actually,
theme song.
Yeah, I noticed that too. It was like a pan flute. I even said it to my wife watching a pan flute theme. That was cool. I did appreciate that a lot. Yeah.
Okay, Rich, what about you? Number three.
Same. The stage and the landscape. You know what though, for me, it held as much swagger as did episode three. I enjoyed when they went to the water world, and I enjoyed that as we talked about it. But this one I really enjoyed too. The whole samurai, it had a really good samurai, Karate Kid storytelling and visual flavor for me. And I've watched a lot of samurai movies, so I thought they really nailed it. You know, they had Jenny was talking about, they had the walled town, they had the wasteland outside, which is in a lot of samurai movies, the lanterns on the street, the big old gong on the front gate, all that stuff, the garden in the inner sanctum, an evil magistrate whose sole purpose is to fuel the heroes with an endless supply of baddies so they can hack them up and shoot them. Right? The fight at the end between Asaka and the magistrate, it was a little slower, but they kind of do that in samurai movies too, where,
they stare at each other.
Yeah, they stare at each other. They're trying to summarize, their powers and their abilities, and they're respecting. There's like
size
some
each other
sort
up.
Of unspoken rule where you can't just suddenly attack. You have to wait or something. I don't know.
But that's like the quick draw. When does that quick draw happen?
Yeah. And the actress that played the magistrate, Morgan Elsbeth on screen, her name is Deanna Lee Inosanto, and she's the daughter of a martial arts legend, Inosanto, and she's also the goddaughter of Bruce Lee, so she had some street cred.
Yeah, and that's how she got that middle name, in honor of him. So I read, this episode is heavily inspired by classic samurai films like Akira Kurosawa's Yojimbo. Mando kind of plays the role of Toshiro Mifune's wandering Ronin, while Magistrate Morgan Elsbeth and Ahsoka fight for the fate of Caladan like the crime lords did in Yojimbo. And I think that's awesome. And Star Wars has always been inspired by samurai movies like Hidden Fortress and things. I was sort of asking myself, okay, but is this one a little too on the nose, right down to the Asian architecture? And it's just like not even very far removed from a samurai movie at all. Right. But I'm like, nah, it was freaking cool. I think it's great.
I do wonder why.
What you guys think
at the end, why Osaka didn't use more of her force powers during that last battle, though. I was a little curious about that. You know, maybe they were just trying to keep in tradition with a samurai sword battle.
Yeah.
And I kind of think that when you see Jedis working like that, in a way they are using the force a little bit in subtle ways, you know, just like I've always thought using a lightsaber would take some control, some force control. So you don't slice your own legs off and stuff.
No, you know, I agree. I feel like once they start using their lightsabers, it's suddenly like their other force powers have all been concentrated on that.
Yeah. Sometimes they do the force push, though.
Right. That's true. That's what I'm talking about.
But sometimes it's kind of like to bring this lightsaber back to them.
Yeah. That too, yeah.
Or just taking her weapon away from her.
Oh, there's nothing more awesome than a lightsaber throw, I think. That I always think is cool. So maybe we'll see that.
Okay, Chris?
Well, I feel like I do this all the time, but the cold open of this episode was amazing. And this show seems to be able to nail the cold open almost every week. Rich, I think said, you know, there's the wasteland outside the city. I thought it looked amazing. And the whole scene, how they introduce Ahsoka Tano in the fog using the lightsaber, and that's all you can see of her, you know, amongst the trees and stuff like that. And the way she disappeared into the fog when she turned them off and then would reignite just at the right time to like slice a dude in half. So it was exciting. It was fun to look at. And they didn't waste any time getting into the awesomeness of the Jedi. And this, of course, was our first introduction to like a real Jedi on the show. So it made me excited, got me really pumped for the episode. And again, the show just nails the cold open almost every week.
Yeah. When we first glimpse what was supposed to be a forest, because remember Bo-Katan was like, go to the forest planet of what's the planet called?
Corvus.
Yeah. Go to the forest planet of Corvus. And then our first scene, I was like, oh crap. Well, there's no more forest. Something bad has happened.
And the poor like lumbering animals are trying to get a little meal, but there's barely anything left for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was something I was just going to say about, oh yeah. Just the way that she popped in there in the beginning. It was so badass, and she was like a Jedi ninja. That's what was cool about her. She would disappear and then reappear and whoosh, let blaze her blades and cut something and then go away. And then when Mando was out looking for her and he's like, did you hear something? And all of a sudden, whoa, she's right there. It startled me. And I think if he hadn't said her name, he would have been dead.
Oh, probably.
That was a cool scene.
Yeah,
I think that was my favorite moment.
It's pretty tough to go up against the Jedi, and he even said it, you know, that's a lot to ask, and my price is high. So he needed to start that conversation, or he wasn't going to last too much longer.
Yeah. Wait, no, you don't understand. But I actually don't think he ever intended on killing her, right? He was just playing into that so the magistrate would tell him where she was.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know what? I was going to talk about it, but the little fight that they had, that little battle when they first meet was great. I mean, defending against her lightsabers with the armor on his arms was so cool.
Yeah.
The flamethrower, the grappling hook, and her jump over the tree, and then it's over. It was so exciting, though. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of too bad it didn't keep going on. I understand Mando probably would have been sliced in half, but it was great what we got. I loved it. And it just kind of reinforced how both of these characters are just masters of their ability, right? And so cool.
I think it's cool. I think this is I didn't know this before anyway, that Beskar is either impervious or at least resistant to lightsabers. And it makes sense because we know that the Mandalorians and the Jedi are ancient enemies. That's what the magistrate even said. Mm-hmm. And that the Mandalorian weapons and armor were developed specifically to fight the Jedi. So it totally makes sense. But I think if you're a Jedi, you need to focus on like the seams, you know, right under
the
neck. Yeah, the soft parts.
It's a cool thing, though. They made such a big deal about the purity of it in this episode, too. That staff was pure Beskar.
Yeah, and I love the way it clanged when he hit it against his own metal. Yeah,
it's like a tuning fork. You'd bang it and listen to the thing. But
calling to each other.
I wonder if the purity of it plays into how much protection it is against the lightsaber. You know, if it's only 50% Beskar, it's not as good because it's 50% something else. Yeah.
Would you like to be in a tank that was only 50% steel metal. And 50%
wood,
lightweight plastic.
Or I wonder if she, yeah, if she would have hit him hard enough, it would have broken through.
I wonder. Probably. I've always thought of lightsabers as basically able to slice anything. So yeah. I think this is a cool development.
Yeah, I made quick work of those trees.
Sure did. Sure. Yeah,
that was my first thought. Was like, man, a lightsaber would make camping hecka easy.
You ever notice though? We see robots, we see droids, I should say, sliced right in half, but you never see people sliced in half. They're always just kind of sliced and they fall down.
Right.
Or they like, was it disapparate?
Yeah. I mean, we did see, and you guys didn't, I don't think you mentioned it last week, but remember when Gwyn Cara Dune was infiltrating that group and those aliens that look like they have like weird double chins? That was the same race as in the cantina in Star Wars where Ben Kenobi sliced off his arm.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And I mean, I remember as a kid being pretty horrified by that. Like, oh my God, I thought he was a good guy. Now I'm desensitized, so I barely even notice stuff like that. But as a kid.
Now you're just like, I want a lightsaber. Yeah.
But I mean, it is true now that it's sort of accepted that Star Wars is if not for kids, at least it needs to be okay for kids. Then there's a lot more droids involved for Jedi to slice through.
That's true. Yeah.
And also the morality is a lot simpler. Bad versus evil. Good versus
bad
evil.
Versus
and that's
evil.
good versus evil. Bad. And that's it. Right.
That's like Evil Dead. Bad versus evil.
That's hilarious.
Nice.
Our kids, we've noticed they love Darth Vader pajamas and the red lightsabers and stuff. We're like,
You're raising that's little dark side Jedis, you guys.
Yeah. That's right. Okay, Jenny, what's your number two?
My number two is a believable villain. So Michael Biehn, is that how you pronounce it? Michael Biehn. So he plays a mercenary who looks like he's just going to try to save his skin at the end, which is so believable because I'm kind of sick of seeing, you know, good versus evil. And the evil is like these mercenaries that somehow show way more employee loyalty than anybody I've ever met. Like they're willing to die, you know, for even though they're supposed to be just like mercenaries. And you're like, dang, look at these people. They're fighting more than anyone should reasonably do so. Like
I know, huh?
They're like willing to die for something. I don't know.
We should see a bunch of stormtroopers just running away all the time. Fuck this.
Right.
I mean, that's so to see this guy actually make a reasonable argument at the end, right? About how, oh, who's gonna win? Let's just wait to see who wins and then I'll give up. The fact that he still tried to kill the Mandalorian is still believable because he's probably someone with an ego who just doesn't like to lose.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I feel like that undermines your point a little bit, that he was just trying to trick him into thinking he was going to give up so that he could get the
job
on
him. Yeah, but see, that comes from within, comes from him. It doesn't come from like some loyalty. Weird loyalty to his employer, which I'm just like, come on. As an employer myself,
I don't
know better
how
than
you
to...
You can know for sure what his motivations are.
I trust humanity's self-esteem to know that no employee is that beaten down. I respect
my
employees, man.
I wish Walmart hired more
people
like him.
If they say, no way, I'm like, that makes sense. So anyways, so it's good to see a believable villain. I that was just heartwarming in a way.
Yeah, you know, I wonder though, if he would have just laid down his weapon and stepped aside, I bet Amanda would have just let him live.
Yeah.
Well, he's a believably, well, for me, a believably arrogant villain just can't lose. And that's how I'm selling it to myself.
Yeah, we've seen other people like that recently. But yeah, their ego won't let them concede. So, okay, now we are at Rich. What do you got for number two?
Number two, I'm going to go with, you know that scene? I really enjoyed the scene where Ahsoka and Grogu, I think that's the first time we've said his name, huh?
It's going to take a while to get used to.
Yeah, I know, huh? Our mind melding, so to speak. You know, they're sitting around the little lantern, you know, and they're just, you know, that scene lasted almost 2 minutes, which is an eternity on screen with no talking. But the facial expressions and the nods and the looks and the body language, I was mesmerized by it all. And it was done with an actor and a puppet, for crying out loud.
That's right.
You know, normally if action and pacing is replaced by dialogue for more than 30 seconds, I tend to lose interest. But this time it was really held my interest. That's why I had a hard time with Game of Thrones, by the way. But anyways, because most dialogue in a show is designed to promote drama or conflict, usually through bad decision making and, you know, like answering questions with questions and all that bullshit. Mm-hmm.
Or ego can be too.
Ego, mm-hmm. just simply withholding information. In some of the older movies and shows, this was common to have these long periods of silence where you just watch what the characters are doing, and you kind of get to fill in the blanks with what you imagine is going on. And I totally dug that, and that they went to this. And it, you know, it's also part of the whole samurai movie genre thing where you get to just watch without a whole lot of dialogue. Mm-hmm. And so I was impressed with that they did that, and I was impressed with myself that I liked it.
Yes, I love that you brought that up, because I totally agree. And that's one reason why I can't stand Michael Bay, because he will not leave any minute, second of silence in a movie. It has to be balls to the wall the whole time, you know? And just Favreau knows how to just slow down and let, I don't know. Just,
you got to change the pace.
Yeah, very, very the pace, and not have a lot of dialogue and just, you know, just soak up the scene. Or yeah, in this case, it was nonverbal communication, which was really fascinating. So yeah, I like that too.
I thought it was really well done. I mean, there was a lot more to that scene than just that sort of nonverbal communication bit too, right? And it was a big important part of the episode and a part of the story. And you're right, Favreau knows how to do it. And mm-hmm. good filmmakers and directors know how to do it, right? Whereas Michael Bay, it's, to be fair, that's a different aesthetic. It's a different style, and he does what he does okay, I guess, but it's not the same thing.
No, but I mean, I think even J.J. Abrams could use a little bit of this, you know, like the first scene in Rise of Skywalker where they're light skipping. Oh, here's a crazy green forest. Oh, here's an ice planet. Here's this and that and this and that. And I'm just like, I don't care, you know, but when you just have a scene of this Jedi staring at this puppet, I'm totally enraptured.
Yeah, he did that with Star Trek too. My God, the opening scene of Star Trek was like made for people with ADHD.
Yeah.
You have to watch it like 20 times to figure out what the hell's going on.
I mean, it's definitely cool to have balls to the wall action, and Favreau's shown he can do that too in The Mandalorian, but I like it. It takes confidence to slow things down. It's just like showing confidence that, hey, we know this is interesting. These characters are interesting, and you might like to just sit here and live with them in a quiet moment for a little while. I like that.
Well, I mean, I think it's just good pacing. I mean, mm-hmm. you need to reset the pace so that when you speed up, it feels good again.
Yeah. Yeah. Like there's, you're okay.
Yeah. I'm not going to go further than that.
So since you brought up the name, what do you guys think of the name? We learned Baby Yoda's name.
I think it'll take some time to get used to, but I'm not against it. That being said, you know, my daughter was watching and she said, I don't think that name suits him. I'm going to continue calling him Baby Yoda.
Don't.
I think that was probably a lot of people's instinct.
Yeah.
And maybe it even was mine for a second, but I realized that it just takes a while to get used to names.
Of course.
And like when everybody found out that the iPad was going to be called the iPad, there were a lot of jokes about that. And now we don't even think about it. You probably didn't even remember that until I just mentioned it. Maybe, or maybe you all think it's silly still. But anyways, I just think it takes a while, and I think it's fine. I think it suits him okay. It sounds, Grogu actually sounds like maybe more of a, like a big orc or something, but it's fine for
it sounds
Baby
like
Yoda
a Yoda-esque name.
It does, yeah.
And you know, I mean, it does is add complexity to him. He had one name, now he has two names, and you can use either name depending on the situation. You know, I mean, so I kind of like that because it adds complexity to him, right? You can be like Grogu because you're like being serious.
Grogu, you come here now.
And then you can be like Baby Yoda.
Well, he calls him kid.
He did respond.
Kid or the child. Yeah. No, it's like it's like if my mom calls me Christopher. It has a different tone, different intention.
There you go.
Maybe his real name is Grogifer.
So it's like Grogu. Grogu. Be serious and use the force right now. And then like Baby Yoda.
Grogoxovich.
Yeah.
Richard and I actually have a friend who changed her name, and it was really hard for me to get used to calling her the new name. Yeah. But I eventually did.
Well, it's amazing.
Not when she's not around, though.
It's amazing what we can get used to, right? Like, look at any Star Wars name. usually you learn them from day one and you just go with it, right? But we've been calling him Baby Yoda for two seasons or a season and a half, and now all of a sudden he has a name, so it's just a shift in thinking. Well, it'll be fine.
Yeah. Unless you're my wife.
she hated it.
No. She loved it because she loves Baby Yoda. It doesn't. She's like, oh my God, what a cute name. Because she's totally a Baby Yoda fan. I mean, you could have named the kid Shithead. And she'd be like, oh my God, what a cute name.
I'm not so sure that's true, Rich. But I liked when Ahsoka said, Grogu and I can feel each other's thoughts. And Mando said, Grogu. And then Baby Yoda looked up at him like,
and made a little,
you said my name.
Little chirpy noise too every time he says it. Yeah.
And then he repeated it, Grogu, and he chirped again.
Yeah, yeah.
That was cute. It's just a little, makes them a little bit more connected.
And they didn't make, like when she says it, first of all, she just kind of drops it. They don't make a big deal out of it. She just uses his name. They sort of make a bit of a deal out of it after that, as you just said. But I like the way they just included it
makes
into the line. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like almost like she assumed he already knew his name, right?
Yes. Yeah. And it was a big deal. It was as big of a deal to us as it was to Mando. It's like, what'd you say?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Okay, where are we now?
I think me.
We're on number two for Chris.
Yeah, yes. I think. And it's the same sort of thing. I was going to talk about his name, but we also learned lots about his history, too. You know, she says he was raised at the Jedi Temple on Coruscant. He had many masters, and then he was hidden from as the Empire rose, he was hidden from them. And, you know, his memories are dark because he was lost and alone. And how that she senses much fear in him, and he's hidden his abilities to try to stay safe, right? And he uses them only for survival. And I thought this was all such great stuff just about the way Grogu has been conducting himself for a while, because you think he's this like totally innocent little child, but there's obviously a lot going on there, and it hasn't been apparent right now, or until now. And then she also talks about his attachment to the Mandalorian and how that could lead him on a path toward the dark side, because it's like the Spider-Man thing, right? The villains always go after the ones he loves. And, you know, having an attachment to the Mandalorian kind of makes him weak in a way and more susceptible to the dark side. So it's all really very interesting and hopefully plays out at some point in the future. But I just loved learning more about Baby Yoda.
That whole thing with Ahsoka is particularly relevant because Ahsoka was Anakin Skywalker's apprentice / Padawan. And she saw him fall to the dark side and then had to face him. And the reason why, I guess she knows, is that he was attached, well, to his mother. And it was a traumatic moment when he couldn't stop his mother from dying.
Right.
So that attachment. And then he became attached to Padme and made it his goal to try to cheat death. And that's sort of what drew him over to the dark side. So now in her mind, if you're attached, that might become more important to you and you'll be desperate enough to go to the dark side. And that sort of fits in with the Jedi kind of separating all these younglings from their parents to train them to try to basically, it sounds horrible, but cut that attachment early on. So it kind of fits in with all of it.
It does. Anakin falls to the dark side at the hands of Palpatine through manipulation of his personal attachments, right? And
it's
pretty common, you know, storytelling, I think, but whatever. It works really well. And it puts Baby Yoda in that position in that he's not infallible, sort of, right? He potentially could go the wrong way, or depending on how you see it, I suppose. But I like it a lot. It works well for Jedi. It works well for Star Wars.
Which is tantalizing. What if he does turn to the dark side?
You see? It's who knows?
And he'll just be getting all the cookies and everything.
I mean, look, he's a baby and he can already like stop fire. And remember last year he lifted up that rhinoceros like being or the rhinoceros like creature. I mean, that thing had to weigh several tons.
Yeah.
I mean, we often think of this, Jason and I. What would happen if Bodhi had superpowers?
It's if he had the force,
utterly frightening.
Screwed.
A 3-year-old with powers like that. I mean,
I thought of that this episode when he got that little ball that he always wants off the.
Right.
I mean, when he first pulled it off the ship, he's just like Bodhi would be. And the cookies last time.
All about what you want, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we're at you for number one.
Number one. And we've touched on it a little bit in the previously, but basically the badass fighting. I mean, you know, the previous episode, there was a lot of shooting, and shooting is its own class, and that's cool. But this was, you know, weapon to weapon, hand to hand combat. And I enjoy that. I like that. There's a certain beauty to it and one-on-oneness to it that I like. So there was a lot of that, right?
And it was done well, too, right?
It was done well.
Because it's not always. The sword fighting styles throughout Star Wars have really varied.
Yeah. So Ahsoka Tano either, you know, out in the forest taking people down one by one, or whether she's fighting the magistrate, you know, one-on-one in the inner sanctum, the one-on-one between the Michael Biehn character, the mercenary, and the Mandalorian. So there's just a lot of that. And it was wordless, right? Like, this was the classic samurai Western, you know, wordless fight. And I liked that. I mean, I just liked how it was show, not tell, right? Yep. And there was just so much of it, you know, throughout mm-hmm. the whole thing. I mean, there was enough dialogue to keep the plot moving. But, you know, think of that guy who became the magistrate afterwards, right? The older Asian guy, right? Mm-hmm. He really didn't say anything.
Right.
He had two lines.
I know. And somehow, I guess, the Mandalorian sort of sized him up and just with a look realized that he was an okay guy.
Right. And that's what I like it. I like an episode that minimizes dialogue successfully like that, you know?
Yes. Although I did, on that part, I was a little bit like, really? He figured that out just by a look? But okay.
But
I'd prefer that than if it was some boring explication.
Right. So I just enjoyed how this episode was, in a way, not a lot of dialogue, and yet so much got done, whether it was through battle or through just, you know, motions.
Body
and
language.
So that was, you know, I really appreciated that. That was
Did Mando put that guy in charge, or did Ahsoka put him in charge? I sort of felt like she did it because she knew the place better. She knew the people better.
I don't know. I think he just kind of stepped
he might
up.
Have been.
He was the first.
He might have been the dude in charge before they were imprisoned.
Maybe,
it could be.
Yeah.
That could be it too. Yeah.
Need to know, but it's an interesting to wonder.
Absolutely. I agree. I don't want to have too much dialogue, especially during the fights, during the battle. And the battle with the magistrate was great for that. They didn't talk. They just, you know, fought. And I can appreciate a good one-liner, of course, but you don't need that here. Yeah. It was really well done.
Yeah,
and I also, The fight wise was realistic. Like, it wasn't flashy. I know people said it was kind of slow, but that it's kind of more realistic that way, because that is how battles are if you watch, say, like Olympics karate or Olympics, you know.
For sure.
That kind of stuff.
The magistrate held her own better in that fight than I kind of expected, to be honest. She clearly knows what she's doing with the Beskar staff. But when you put anyone up against lightsabers and two lightsabers at that, I sort of thought, boy, this is going to be over quick.
Yeah, but she put up a good fight, and I respect her for that.
Yeah, very
it's because
cool.
Because she's Bruce Lee's goddaughter.
That's right.
Well, that's one of the things this show does well, too, is it incorporates a lot of canon from everything, you know, video games, comics, fans, you know, fan fiction and all that stuff. It's so cool. Mando, you know, there's very few people. They can go up against a Jedi, but Mando survived. Mm-hmm. He had the reflexes and weapons. You know, he got the magistrate who put up a pretty good fight. You know, you have others like General Grievous. And then you've of course got the other Mandalorian got swallowed by the Sarlacc. Jeez, I forget his name now.
Boba Fett.
Yeah, you know, Boba he was Fett. Up against him too.
Where?
Maybe not the most intelligent thing to do, but they do put up for some good entertainment when you're fighting a Jedi.
They sure do.
All right. Number one?
Number one, Rich.
For Rich?
Oh, me. Okay. You know what? I got some predictions. All right.
Whoa.
Here's what I think is going to happen. So we now know Ahsoka is searching for Grand Admiral Thrawn, which I think is where the last episode of Rebels left the characters, right? The very last episode of the show Rebels was Thrawn and a Jedi floating off into space, and she's like, well, we got to go catch up with these guys. So this kind of gives her an out. So I don't think we're going to see Ahsoka anymore. Not in this series. And now Mando, He has a spear made of pure Beskar, so we know he's going to go straight up and fight Moff Gideon with the Darksaber. They're just going to duke
yes.
it out. Yeah. And, surprise, they're duking it out, and guess who shows up? Bo-Katan and Boba Fett. They're going to show up to join the fight, man. It's going to be the Mandos. I'm not sure, though, if Gideon is going to survive. I mean, we know what he has started with the whole cloning thing ultimately prevails. But, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be him. They could give the whole project to somebody else if he gets whacked. But meanwhile, Mando takes Grogu to the Jedi Temple on Tython, and little baby Yoda reaches out through the Force and FaceTimes with none other than Luke Skywalker.
He summons all the Jedi,
man. And I didn't mistakenly call Grogu Baby Yoda. I think it's still Baby Yoda because I think that's ultimately who that kid is. I think it's Yoda's. I think it might be Yoda's son or maybe nephew.
No.
Or hell, maybe even
second cousin once removed.
I do not want to imagine Yoda having sex. Maybe he's a polyp that came up.
Yeah, you have no idea how they reproduce.
Leg.
He's asexual.
Yes, maybe that's why he likes eggs so much.
So you mentioned fighting Moff Gideon. I wonder if, let's say, Mando gets a chance to fight another Jedi just to kind of reinforce that this new weapon he has is impervious to lightsaber, you know, can fight with it. And then maybe when he fights Moff Gideon, the Darksaber will slice right through it.
I was going to say, I don't know. I don't have any reason to believe that the Darksaber wouldn't be the one weapon that can carve through it.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. Or maybe not. But yeah. I definitely think that Mando's going to fight Moff Gideon now that he has this new
That's the boss battle. Oh, that's the boss battle. Come on.
Boss battle.
Yep. Well, my number one was going to be the ending. And it's funny you bring all that up, Rich, with your predictions, because I was a tiny bit underwhelmed by the ending of this episode. You know, we've spent all this time looking for a Jedi, Ahsoka Tano, and we finally found her, and then in the end she just tells Mando to take Grogu somewhere else. And like, I'm looking forward to seeing this ancient Jedi temple and what happens there, but I started thinking, I kind of wish some of these really cool characters we've had on this show would stick around for more than one episode and not just be stepping stones for Mando to get to the next thing, because I don't think we're, as you just said, I don't think we're gonna see Tano again.
Be careful what you wish for.
Well, maybe we will, but I feel like we're not. And I don't think we're going to see Bo-Katan again. Cara Dune was in one episode this season. I don't think we're going to see her. And I kind of want everybody to keep the band together a little bit, right? But
Are you sure? You don't think there's going to be one final battle where everybody shows up a la Avengers?
Well, maybe. Yeah,
that's
maybe.
That's what we thought last year.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But like,
it kind of did happen last year, though.
It kind of did.
They were all there.
Yeah. But I do, Rich, I like your sort of prediction of Bo-Katan and her crew showing up again in this final battle because the Mandalorians get together. You know, that would be awesome. And then if Grogu does summon the Jedi, maybe they're all going to appear as well. And by they, I don't know who, but, you know, a group of Jedi.
It could be Luke.
It could be. Yes.
Yeah.
He's kicking around.
He's
out there
one
somewhere.
Of the few Jedi that's left. You reminded me last week, you guys mentioned that this rebel pilot was trying to recruit Cara Dune to come back.
Right.
You know, to be part of that. Well, he's not a rebel anymore. It's just the new.
He's a new Republic pilot.
New Republic. Yeah. But anyway, I feel like that might be in her future. She said no, and I'm not a joiner. But then she looked at the insignia that he gave her and maybe she's thinking about it. So I feel like something along those lines might be in her future storyline. But anyway, as far as what you're saying, my first instinct is to be like, oh, cool, Cara Dune. I hope she's in every episode. But now as it's happening, and I actually kind of like that it's a whole new thing each week. And he's like the kung fu guy wandering around, you know, or what is it, Lone Wolf and Cub, and meets new people all the time. I'm kind of digging it. I mean, the characters are so cool that you kind of want to see more of them, but it's very bold to leave you wanting more, you know, and then go on to something else equally cool. Well, so I like it.
And also the fact that you don't know whether everyone's going to come back at the end or not. I mean, the uncertainty means that this is not a too predictable, right? That's good.
You guys all make really good points, and I'm a big fan of leave them wanting more, you know, right? You know, you go see a band that's you love and they only play 6 songs in 30 minutes and then they leave, like, you're going to the next show for sure, right? But a little bit of me feels like kind of bit of, at least with the Jedi here, Ahsoka Tano, it's a little bit of a bait and switch. Like, we've been building to this for a long time and suddenly, oh no, yeah, I'm not going to do anything. You got to go somewhere else.
It's kind of our problem. Well, when I heard Ahsoka Tano was going to be in The Mandalorian, I thought, oh, she's going to be a character. And it's nope, yeah, she's getting an episode, basically, unless we're wrong.
No, come on. Think of this as a zombie show. It's going to be that last episode, and there's going to be tons of them. There's going to be throngs of them, and it's going to be freaking amazing.
We'll see. I mean, so far, I feel like they've been knocking it out of the park, so I'm sure it's going to be great no matter what happens.
Well, that's the
thing. That is part of the draw.
The other thing for me, too, is I'm a really big fan of assessing the completeness of something, right? Like, you can look at an individual episode, but I also think looking at the entire season or entire run of a show is just as important. So mm-hmm. I will reserve 100% final judgment until we've seen it all.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess that's everybody's 3 points, right?
Think so.
So let me get into, I got a lot of stuff to go through here. Hopefully it's interesting. Feel free to jump in. This weapon that he got, it's kind of cool. A bit of a level up for the Mandalorian. It's possible that it's a Bevi Rajir, a traditional Mandalorian hunting spear with a removable counterbalance weight on the non-pointy end that can serve as either a weapon in combat or a walking stick. This Bevi Rajir was introduced in Star Wars Legends Republic Commando novel Order 66 in 2008. We learn that Grogu was once a youngling training to become a Jedi in the Jedi Temple on Coruscant.
Yoda is.
Right. Ahsoka says he was raised at the Jedi Temple on Coruscant. Many masters trained him over the years. At the end of the Clone Wars, when the Empire rose to power, he was hidden. Someone took him from the temple, then his memory becomes dark. So Coruscant, as probably everyone knows, is the planet that's covered in one big city. It was the capital of the Republic and also the Empire when it was renamed, I think, Imperial City or something. In the prequel trilogy,
so Roman,
we saw all the Jedi based at this just long spire, the Jedi Temple. And then in Revenge of the Sith, we see Anakin kill a bunch of younglings at the Jedi Temple. So that Revenge of the Sith, that was about 28 years before the time of the Mandalorian. So if little Grogu is 50 right now, then
51.
Or 51, then he was about 22 then. So that means he was there at the Jedi Temple before the Republic fell and Anakin right. turned to the dark side. And that would also mean that Grogu and Anakin were both 9 years old when Anakin first arrived at the temple in Phantom Menace. So they're the same age. I don't know if that's of any significance.
Huh.
Grogu I get the sense that Grogu, you know, ages at a different rate than others. So he may not have
a different rate.
He may not have started at the at Jedi training until he was 22-ish.
Well, 22 is when that ended, when the Jedi...
Okay, 20-ish.
Right.
20, yeah.
So, at 9, he was probably 22s. Still figuring how to walk.
Yeah, it could be. So he was around, my point is that he was around at the same time as all these characters, Yoda and Anakin and Ben Kenobi. And
no, I definitely think he was traumatized by having all his classmates slaughtered by Anakin.
Yeah, that would upset anybody, yeah.
Yeah, that I mean... I would assume if he wasn't, that's pretty weird. The temple was abandoned. Yeah, that one kid, Nick.
He's gone.
The temple was abandoned and largely destroyed during the time of the Empire. And then during the rise of the New Republic, it was rebuilt for the reformed Jedi Order under the leadership of Luke Skywalker. And, you know, Ahsoka says, I've only known one other being like this, a wise Jedi master named Yoda. But in Phantom Menace, we saw that there was another of Yoda's species that was part of the Jedi Council. It's a female. Her name is Yaddle. But she wasn't in Attack of the Clones. So I think it's said that she stepped down and somebody else, another Jedi, was in the council. And she hasn't been seen since, as far as I know. So I guess Ahsoka might not know her. Maybe she would know of her. I don't know. But anyways, it does make me wonder, maybe Yoda and Yaddle are Grogu's mom and dad, like you were suggesting.
Right.
Some hot I had
forgotten her.
No.
I don't even think I knew that there was another of Yoda species on the council. So.
If you look up, Yaddle, Y-A-D-D-L-E, you'll see a picture.
Well, there you go. That settles it.
Right.
Clearly.
But Palpatine must have been aware of Grogu, too. So maybe Palpatine factors into all of this. You know, he might be part of what was going on in that weird clone station last time. Ahsoka tells Mando that he needs to take Grogu to the ruins of this Jedi temple on the planet Tython. Tython's history is shrouded in myth, but it's supposed to be home to, well, it is home to a Jedi temple, but some say it's the Jedi Order's first temple ever, and some say it's where the Force was discovered. So it's pretty significant, if so.
Wow.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty big deal.
Yeah. So that'll be cool. Maybe that'll be next week. Or he'll probably get, you know, roped into doing some task next week, and then it'll be the week after that.
Right. But it's still cool. I mean, he has a direction. He's going to the origin of Jedi-ism. Because, you know, there was a part of me that kept thinking, like, just get arrested by the police and then you'll be taken to Luke Skywalker and come on, you know. I mean,
no, but you never know how that's going to
But you know what?
Up.
Luke Skywalker is a new Jedi. He really doesn't know the war and the history, right? And so the Mandalorian is now kind of chasing it to the source, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, Luke Skywalker resurrected the new temple, right?
Well, yeah, Mandalorian doesn't know Luke Skywalker.
No, right. But Luke Skywalker probably knows about the Mandalorian because he's taking care of, like, this prodigy kid.
Well, here's the thing is, the fact that Grogu was taken as a child at the fall of the Empire, hidden away, that completely mirrors Luke himself. Luke and Leia at the same time, even.
Yeah.
Taken away and hidden away. And also the way that Anakin, I mean, not exactly the same, but you know, he, as a child, he was taken from his mother too, or he at least separated from her. So there's some similarity going on there.
Right. But there's this whole library of Jedi knowledge that they need to access as new Jedis. I mean, don't you think both Luke and Grogu are kind of new Jedi? They weren't, their training was never completed.
Okay.
Right. And so now they're kind of new Jedi. So they need to go to the past. They need to go to the origin, which is wherever Mandalorian is going to take Grogu to.
And you think Luke is going to show up there too, because he's not really complete. Although he sort of finished his training on his own, became a Jedi master, right? But
yeah,
maybe. But maybe Grogu will bring it to him. Who knows? I mean, we'll see.
I'm just not sure what point you're making.
Okay. All right. Well, then let us continue, since I'm not making myself clear.
We just got a hard on for Luke Skywalker. That's all.
Is that what you're saying, that you want Luke to show up or something?
No, I'm just saying that, you know, I feel like Grogu is the new Jedi and the Mandalorian. They're going into the past of Jedi knowledge, right? Because think of it, the Jedi was destroyed for
years. They're going to this planet because she told him there's a special rock there where if they put Grogu on it, he can decide whether he wants to call out to a Jedi or he can choose the Mandalorian, and because it's a special place, right? The fact that it's the origin of the Force and the Jedi is just another part of the story of this place. But the point of them going there is that it has a special power that he can use to call out to a Jedi to come and take him and train him, or he can decide to stay with the Mandalorian.
Right.
That's the point of it, I think.
Okay.
So Ahsoka Tano, if you want to see her story, people listening, watch the Clone Wars and Rebels, because she's one of the main characters in the Clone Wars and becomes prominent in Rebels. But basically, as I've said, she's Anakin's apprentice in the Clone Wars. And then she faces him as Darth Vader in Rebels. And in the Clone Wars, at one point, she was framed for terrorist acts and was banned from the Jedi Order. So she's kind of becomes an outcast. And then during Order 66, which is when, you know, Palpatine flipped the switch for all the clones of the Clone Wars to kill the Jedi, she went into hiding. The last that we saw her alive, as Richard was saying a little while ago, she was looking for one of the main characters of Rebels called Ezra Bridger, who was a Jedi Padawan.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was part of this battle with Grand Admiral Thrawn, which was mentioned in this episode. And he, there was these whale like space species that spirited Thrawn and Ezra away into hyperspace. I think Ezra sort of engineered it to, I'm going to get Thrawn out of here and I'm going to have to sacrifice and go too. And so, Ahsoka's been looking for him. And that episode, actually, there was a time jump in Rebels. So we don't, Rebels takes place before the original Star Wars. But that episode was sometime later. We don't know when, but it could be soon before this, which, as we know, Mandalorian takes place after the original trilogy. So I hope that timeline is making sense. There was the Clone Wars cartoon where we first meet Ahsoka. Then later she comes back in Rebels, which is just before Star Wars, the first, you know, episode 4, and faces Vader. And then at some time later, she's looking for Ezra. And so now she wants to find. So I think she's still on that mission to find Ezra from Rebels. And that's why she's looking for Thrawn. I think that's what this whole thing is about.
That's the feeling I got.
Yeah. And so, I think still, though, this episode, since we can place, unlike that episode in Rebels, we can place this episode in time pretty well, like 9 or 10 years after the Battle of Yavin and the original Star Wars, that this is the first solid confirmation we have that Ahsoka was alive during and after the original trilogy. We didn't know before now.
Right.
At the end of Rise of Skywalker, when Rey is calling to the Jedi of the past, be with me, and many past Jedi answer, you hear Yoda, Obi-Wan, Luke, and others. You hear Ahsoka in there too. So that means that sometime between where we see her now in Mandalorian, which is about 9 or 10 years after Battle of Yavin, and the Rise of Skywalker, which is 35 years later, she dies in there somewhere, somehow.
Right.
I don't know if anybody cares about any of that.
No, but it makes me realize every week how much stuff I've missed out on having not seen Rebels or the other show, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, I know Thrawn from the novels, the Timothy Zahn novels, which I read a long time ago. But this is
That was like the first Star Wars novel after
after
the series was
over,
Return of the Jedi.
But I read all of those, loved them, but it's been so long, they're not very fresh in my memory. So it kind of makes me want to go back and read those again too.
Well, those are now not considered canon because when Disney bought Star Wars, they're bringing certain things back. And Thrawn actually came back in Rebels and was a prominent character in Rebels. Right. So that was the first time you see him on screen.
Right.
Yeah.
So Ahsoka is a Togruta. Togrutas are a sentient species from the planet Shelee. They're characterized by their colorful skin tones, large montrals and head tails, and white facial pigments, which serve to hide them from predators. A Togruta's montrals allow that thing on her head allows them to sense the movement of objects around them through echolocation and can sense up to 82 feet.
Whoa, cool.
One of these details I'm just making up. No, I'm just kidding. Another well-known Togruta is the Jedi Master Shakti, who was in Attack of the Clones and the Clone Wars series.
Oh, come on. Everybody knows the most memorable one is the half-naked one next to Jabba the Hutt.
No, those are a Twi'lek.
Twi'lek.
Yeah. Oh, those are Twi'lek. Yeah,
which I thought for a second Ahsoka was one of those, but no. Similar looking, but different. So, let's see. At one point in the episode, you spot Morai, which is this mystical bird called a Convor that watched over Ahsoka in the Clone Wars and Rebels and throughout her life. Do you remember anything about that, Rich, from watching the series?
No, I didn't even notice that in the episode.
It was in a tree, and you had to look hard.
Wow.
To find it. Some point in the Clone Wars, Ahsoka constructs a second lightsaber and trains to use two at once. So that's her signature thing. So I'm sure a lot of Clone Wars fans were really stoked to see that for the first time in live action. And while watching this episode, Bodhi said, when she brought out her two sabers, he said, Beat Saber gonna fight?
Yep.
Which I thought was awesome. And then let's see. Ahsoka says she can't train Baby Yoda. Well, we kind of talked about that. She's got PTSD from her experience with Anakin. So I already got that.
Oh, and he has PTSD too. He needs someone more sensitive.
Maybe, yeah. Thrawn is an admiral in the Imperial Navy, Grand Admiral Thrawn, that they mentioned that Ahsoka was looking for in the time of the Galactic Empire. As you mentioned, Chris, he debuted in the famous 1991 novel Heir to the Empire by Timothy Zahn. Since then, he's appeared in countless books and was officially recanonized in 2016 as one of the main villains of Rebels. He's a Chiss. He's got blue skin, red eyes, angular face, brilliant and ruthless strategist. And also, he made a habit of collecting objects of cultural significance to his enemies so he could understand them better, find a way to destroy them. So it's probably because of him, it's speculating, but that this magistrate possesses this Beskar staff or whatever it was, spear. Yep.
Mm. Oh, he sounds like a worthy opponent.
Yeah, I'd like to see him in the series.
Wait, so he hasn't been on any TV, any of the movies?
Nope. No, we've never seen a live action version of him before.
He's a major character who's going to make his premiere in TV.
I think you're probably right about that, yeah. I bet we will see him.
It'd be cool.
Agreed.
I thought it was significant that meeting Ahsoka and even Bo-Katan a couple episodes ago, that connects Mando with characters we know, given Ahsoka was basically Darth Vader's apprentice. You know, this is the first time that he's... I mean, we found out that Baby Yoda probably knew the Emperor, so he's connected that way too. But
yeah, but one step removed from our original characters, right? That's pretty good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then let's see, callbacks. At one point, Ahsoka explained that the Force is an energy field created by all living things. That was the same thing Obi-Wan Kenobi said to Luke Skywalker in A New Hope.
It's like if you had the power to control gravity.
Standard book definition.
Yeah. Mando called Ahsoka's lightsaber a laser sword, which in Phantom Menace, little Annie told Qui-Gon Jinn, "I saw your laser sword." many of the archways in the city are reminiscent of the ones found in old samurai films, but also ones drawn by Ralph McQuarrie for the original trilogy. That was kind of cool. And then I read this on... a lot of this, by the way, I should thank what's it called, Den of Geek, because they had a great article that I borrowed a lot of this from. But they said, some people have pointed out that Grogu's trial in the episode to take first a stone and then a metal cylinder with the Force is a reference to the test Ogami Ito administers to little Daigoro in the 1970 manga Lone Wolf and Cub. In the book, Ogami Ito asks one-year-old Daigoro to choose between a ball and a sword. If he chooses the sword, Daigoro will be taught the way of the Ronin. But if he picks the ball, Ogami Ito will kill him and spare him a life of violence. If the stone is meant to be a weapon and the cylinder is the ball, then the reference kind of tracks. Grogu refuses to use the Force and call the stone to him, but does take the cylinder. This is not really why Ahsoka decides not to train Grogu, but there does seem to be some kind of a connection.
That is a deep cut, man.
I don't know.
I just got the Lone Wolf and Cub first edition collection, and I've been reading it, and that doesn't connect. I mean, that scene in Lone Wolf and Cub was like, do you choose the way of the sword or do you choose the way of peace, right?
And this was more like, do you want your toy versus some rock that you don't care about?
Or do you want this Jedi or do you want me?
But he wouldn't take the rock from Mando, but he would take the little ball.
Right.
That's all for lore and callbacks. I did have a couple of notes. They say Ahsoka says Grogu's hidden his abilities to survive over the years, but he got that cookie last time, and so I'm like, I guess he has to weigh his priorities. Like, is it worth exposing myself?
Hey, for the cookie? Yes.
Guys, Mando barely ever feeds him. He needed food. He was trying to survive.
I loved it when Baby Yoda fell asleep on the rock and you could hear his little voice.
Yeah.
Like that. And it was sad when Mando said, "Wake up, buddy. It's time to say goodbye."
Mm. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
But as you mentioned, he ages differently. So if Mando does raise him, that's going to be...
I mean, I'm, you
Mando's
know...
Mando's going to be a 100-year-old man with like a little toddler.
Right. Right. I mean, we cannot, you know, associate usual human aging with this.
No,
with
Baby he's 50 Yoda. Years old.
Yeah. Yoda right. was
but,
800
But not only
or
that, but he might develop differently. Obviously, his... I mean, he's well wielding the Force, right? So he's old enough to be in school. And yet he has behavior very much like a toddler.
Right, yeah. And he so doesn't know the difference between red and blue either.
Yeah. Or the word no.
So obviously he develops differently from humans.
Yes, he does. So I have a question, a couple of questions. Do you guys have any idea who took Grogu from the Jedi Temple and hid him away?
Master Yoda.
Think so?
It's got to yeah, be. Maybe, I can't yeah. think of anybody
well,
else.
Obi-Wan hid Luke.
Yeah.
He's a hider. Yeah.
What about some, you know, some employee of the Jedi? Come on. Maybe he, you know, is doing his job right and he saved a couple students. Right. I mean, come on. Why do we always have to think the main yeah. characters did it? You know, he could be, you know, good old third level employee.
Yeah. I'm with you. I don't think it's going to be one of our like main characters. It might be somebody we know, but it could just but be secondary or tertiary, but it could also just be somebody new, you know, that we've never heard yeah. of before.
They do draw a lot from canon, don't they?
And then the last thing, when they take Baby Yoda or when Mando takes him to this rock on Tython, I would guess he will choose Mando. He'll be like, da da. But if he does reach out and a Jedi comes, do you really think it might be Luke Skywalker, Rich?
Sort of half-heartedly. I'm
It'd
just
be a different
really,
actor.
I'm just hoping.
It would be cool, I, mean, I think.
I know. I just want to see him again. That's all.
It's yeah. got to be someone cool enough that Grogu is going to choose him.
Yeah, what if
over
it's some dumpy
Mando.
Jedi? yeah, Luke's my favorite character in all of Star Wars. So I would, if they did it well, that'd be pretty damn cool.
I think yeah. it's one of those things that's going to be difficult to do well, if you know what I mean. Like,
yes.
Different actor is going to be weird. It's going to be super weird if they do that. De-aging technology on Mark Hamill is going to be weird.
No, they can't do that.
they can do it.
I mean,
they'd have to get a new actor, I would think.
No, they can yeah. do it. Come on, they did it with Carrie Fisher.
They're going to have to de-age yeah. and de-weigh him.
No, they did they did a completely false Carrie Fisher. Come
yeah,
on.
That was awesome.
If they can do that, they can totally de-age.
No, they can. Like, de-aging, Marvel has perfected it too. Like, they de-aged Iron Man and stuff like that and other characters, but...
Look, Mark Hamill is a good-looking guy. Just with enough...
Is he?
...makeup, he can be younger. No. No,
you guys are all wrong, so let's move on. All right, anybody else got any more notes?
The only one I had was the people in those electro thingies outside the Magistrate's gate there. I thought that was especially brutal, and I assume it was just a deterrent to keep people in line, but I don't know, seemed pretty bad, those poor people.
Mm-hmm. It was a cool yeah. effect.
Yeah, you see the
skeleton. They had to stand on the little platforms, and then if they sagged from exhaustion, they would get electrocuted.
Oh my God. Talk about
that's what it was.
Torture, yeah. Jesus.
You gotta keep that good posture.
Yeah.
I like the proud father moment that Mando experienced when the baby took the little ball from his shifter
did
knob.
Did you see
or whatever
that? Did you see that?
Yeah, he's like, good job, kid. I knew he could do it. Did you see that?
That was awesome. And then she's like, you guys are too connected.
Right. Yeah.
That was awesome. Okay. That is good. We'll take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us. Okay, we're back. It's time for the news. As you guys mentioned, Diana Lee Inosanto, the actor who played the magistrate, is an experienced martial artist and stunt woman. She was trained by her father, Dan Inosanto, who was a student and friend of Bruce Lee. Diana is, in fact, Bruce Lee's godchild, her middle name in homage to the late actor. and recently contributed a foreword to Fiaz Rafiq's biography, Bruce Lee, The Life of a Legend. And Osanto writes that she grew up calling Lee Uncle Bruce and was fairly oblivious to his stardom at the time. But she also wrote that Lee broke down the barriers of racism, kicked his way through the walls of Hollywood discrimination, and bridged the worlds of East and West with his work.
And did it completely by being totally badass.
Yeah.
Totally.
And it's cool because Star Wars kind of bridges East and West a little bit too. I only have one more thing. I've been learning a little bit more about how The Mandalorian is filmed. I mean, we heard this, but I saw a YouTube video where, have you guys seen where they have this, they constructed this super expensive virtual stage that they call the Volume.
Apparently there's an episode of the documentary on Disney Plus about the making of the show, all about that specific thing. Yeah. I just heard about that. Yeah. So it sounds really cool. So we should watch it.
It's the stage is shaped like a cylinder. It's round. It's 20 feet tall, 270 degrees around, 75 feet across. It's the largest and most sophisticated virtual filmmaking environment ever made. They use the Unreal Game Engine to render the movie environments, and they project them on the walls. Or I don't know if it's projected, but it's on the walls somehow. And then they film it as the background. So they just film it. And they can tie the perspective to the camera so that when the camera moves, the perspective, you know, the graphics shift. And pretty much every environment in the show uses this, is virtual, and it uses this technology. Like even the inside of the client's office on Navarro was almost completely virtual.
I mean, it sounds completely groundbreaking.
It's crazy.
I mean, it sounds like
go anywhere.
It sounds like a quantum leap in filming technology.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Once you incur the cost, the big cost of this room, you save money on location shooting. And it's beneficial because you don't have to rush to get like the sunset or whatever. You can just have it be sunset for as many hours as you want.
And you can reuse it over and over again.
You can reuse it for every environment. The actors don't have to act to this giant green screen. Mm-hmm. They can actually see the environment so it feels more real to them. And then one other thing I thought was interesting is sometimes in a green screen, there's a green tint because of the reflection. And that could be an especially big problem because of Mando's shiny Beskar armor. But here you get the right kind of reflections and everything. So it's just really, really cool and innovative.
It's amazing that this whole thing was developed for a TV show, too. Like, it does sound like just a massive jump forward in filmmaking. Who knows what they can do with that? But I'm actually looking forward to watching that documentary now about it because it sounds so cool.
Okay, cool. Let's get into some listener feedback.
So listener responses we have from Dante Howard, phenomenal.
Derek Whitfield writes in, amazing.
Ian Fultz, so much goodness.
John Bucket, gobsmacked. So many reveals.
Shannon Nielsen, it went to a whole new level of awesome. Maybe the coolest Star Wars thing I've ever seen.
Michael Koska, live action Ahsoka was everything I wanted her to be. Incredible.
Bianx Vargas writes, oh my dog, Michael Biehn. not really aging well, but still. Plus, this series is how awesome episodes 7 to 9 could have been. Ooh.
I want to say something. Michael Biehn has aged pretty well. How old is this guy?
Yeah. As an aged guy, I take offense.
No, how old is he? Is he 50-something?
He's 35, believe it or not.
He's in
no! If he's 50-something, that is freaking amazing.
I don't know. I met him once, actually, a long time ago, and I didn't even recognize him in this, so he has changed somehow.
Yeah, I didn't recognize him either, and then when I found out it was him, I looked again through second watch. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's
him
in there.
All right, I'm going to have to go on IMDb.
Steve Barr says, Magistrate Morgan Elspeth must be one heck of a martial artist to still have her fingers after that fight.
Yep.
Brian White says, that name drop at the end had me. What? Now, what's the official spelling on that kid's name? Grogu or Grogru? Or question mark, question mark, question mark.
He spelled it out. Grogoo or Grogu. And it's
you, right?
It's you. It's you with two dots on top. What's that called?
Oh, an umlaut.
Umlaut.
It's not. No, it's just Grogu. Yeah.
Alicia Stout. Can I say how much I love the name Grogu? I mean, could it be any more perfect for his cuteness? Also, Ahsoka is a badass. I've yet to see Clone Wars, or whichever animated show she is on, but I've seen pictures or clips, and she looks identical. Great episode.
Nick.
Okay, I have to tell you, Michael Biehn is 66 years old. Don't tell me he does not look awesome for a 66-year-old.
I think he does.
Yeah, he looks okay.
Okay, all right.
Nick Poblutsky. Hope I got that right, Nick. I'm going to call him Baby Yoda.
Damian Vitale, he will always be Baby Yoda to me.
Yep.
Sherry Morford. I thought this was the best episode yet. Truly loving the series so much. I'm a bit nervous about the possible foreshadowing of Baby Yoda / the child / Grogu turning dark. Did y'all notice that knob he wants so badly looks just like the Death Star? Even has the indentation in it. Can't wait to see what happens next.
It did look a little bit like the Death Star, didn't
it? Yeah.
Mark McBurney, tremendous. Easily the best episode of the whole series so far. That opening scene was fantastically done. Grand Admiral Thrawn finally mentioned and hopefully to make his live-action debut. HK Assassin Droids, just a shame we didn't get a meatbag reference as a nod to the 47 unit from the Knights series. And Tython is a direct mention to the Old Republic and the hero of Tython who defeated Emperor Vishyati?
Vitiati? What is that?
He's Vishyati. Trying to get you to say Vishyati. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know.
Oh, and Baby Grogu, blah, 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 and Baby Grogu will always be Baby Yoda. That is his name.
This is his name, yeah. All right, Jonathan Wukalil. Wukalil. Such a great episode. The Kurosawa feel was fantastic. Those long still shots were glorious. Ahsoka was perfect. Such a great Star Wars character. I can at least forget about the sequels as we now have real Star Wars being made.
Hear, hear. Just kidding. Christopher Parent says, outstanding. The storytelling and visuals were incredible. The series as a whole, but most especially the last three episodes have made me feel like a kid again. As I'm a child of the original trilogy, that's quite a feat. Love the podcast. Looking forward to all your takes. Thank you.
Thank you, Christopher.
Brad Holt. Home run. This show keeps getting better and better. If Disney and Kevin Feige don't hand Star Wars over to Favreau and Filoni, they're nuts. Rosario Dawson was amazing as Ahsoka. The story was solid and the visuals were stunning. I also loved seeing Michael Biehn again, this time as a space version of Johnny Ringo.
I guess that's
who's Johnny Ringo?
I think it's a Jesse James type, real life, you know, band.
Yeah, it was. She was that Western Shootout at the OK Corral. Who was that guy? Forget. Alex Balish. Now that's how to enter Ahsoka Tano. Dave Filoni is a treasure. He drops Easter eggs like Morai when Mando was going to meet her to bring it back to the episode 3 when Anakin killed the younglings. So many questions. Will Luke come into the show? Oh, or will it be Ezra or another? That ending fight scene was good, but the name drop at the end? Well, that's the stuff we want. Fan service? Yes, please, more.
Yeah, I guess he's saying maybe when they summon a Jedi, Ezra will show up from Rebels.
That's a good possibility too, huh?
And here's our call from our good buddy, Steve Brown.
Steve-o.
Hey guys, it's Steve. So that's, Ahsoka Tuna, Tano.
Tuna!
Whatever her name is. Is that her hair or is that like a hat she's wearing, like with a headband and the zebra?
That is part of her body.
Pretty cool episode. As soon as I heard Michael Biehn's voice, I was like, that sounds like Michael Biehn, but I didn't hear anything that he was going to be in this show. And then I looked at IMDb and sure enough, Michael Biehn. And then at the end, we see Michael Biehn. And of course, when they get the close ups of him, and it's definitely Michael Biehn. So it was really cool to see him. In this episode, it was cool to see Rosario Dawson. I don't know. It seems like we might not see her again now that she's given Mando the next place to go, sort of thing. I loved whichever one. I think it was Richard or Chris, one of you guys that said that this is the but first season. And so again, you know, you can't get rid of him until you go to this next place or do this next thing. And But kind of cool getting the Beskar spear. It'll be interesting to see him use that if he uses it. And that fight between what's her name? Tuna? Anyway, Big Tuna? Naka. Yeah, I'll call her Big Tuna from the Sana office.
Taka.
The Morgan woman was pretty cool with two lightsabers. And so I can't wait to hear you guys talk about this one. That knob, I've never noticed before that knob looks like the Death Star. Maybe that's just me missing out on that. So, okay, can't wait to hear you guys. Talk to you later.
I just can't get away from the Death Star. It keeps coming back.
Yeah. There's the fourth Death Star for you right there.
Oh, my God.
It's tiny. It's tiny, right?
All right. That is our show. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. As always, thank you for guesting, Jenny. Hope you had fun.
Yeah.
No comment. Okay. If you want to write in or record a message and send it in, you can email us at groovy@podcastica.com.
Check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/housepodcastica.
We're also on Twitter and Instagram @housepodcastica.
And please check out the other shows on the Podcastica Network at podcastica.com. And check out Chris's podcast at talkingdeadpodcast.com.
Thanks.
All right. That is our show.
Thanks for listening.
Beat Saber gonna fight.
No, I have fun. How could I not have fun?